Bad entrepreneurs. That's what my friend Kent Jones calls them. Bad entrepreneurs are all over the internet. They are business owners who claim to be successful, but lack all the tools one needs to be successful in business.
Welcome to the Empowerment Zone with Ramona Houston, where we zone in on Black and Brown relations and our journey to empowering our communities.
A marketing plan, a competitive advantage, financial capital, an operation strategy, a niche market, all of these are foundations of a business, but fad entrepreneurs don't have them. Kent Jones is appearing for a second time on the Empowerment Zone, and he's all about helping others to build successful businesses. So Kent is a graduate of Morehouse College. He's a longtime friend, and he has been a successful entrepreneur owning franchises in both Baskin-Robbins and McDonald's. He is also a husband and proud father of three boys. Hey, Kent, welcome back to the Empowerment Zone.
Good morning. Excited to be here with you.
Man, I think I shared it with you, but your episode that you did for us in 2020 was one of the highest listened to episodes last year. So I'm excited that you would join us for a second year.
Well, I'm glad that that first one was successful, and I'm always here to support.
Yes, well, as an entrepreneur, you have a lot of great advice to share with my audience, many of who are entrepreneurs or who want to move into that area. And so I'm really excited about the topic you chose today, bad entrepreneurs. But before we get into the topic, of course, I need you to introduce yourself and tell us a little bit about you and your background, because it's a great way for my audience to connect with my guest is getting to know them personally and professionally. So could you tell us about yourself?
Well, my name is Kent Jones. I'm an alumni of Morehouse College, class of 94. When I commenced for Morehouse, I went to the University of Memphis and completed 3 years of a 5-year JD MBA program. I ended up leaving that program and purchasing three Baskin-Robbins franchises. I did the Baskin-Robbins franchises for 2.5-3 years, and I sold those and got into McDonald's. At the time I became a McDonald's franchisee, I was the youngest Black franchisee. I sold my stores December 2019.
How many did you have? How many McDonald's did you have?
At the time that we sold, 6. But it varied throughout the year, sometimes a few more, sometimes a few less, as our company grew and shrank. But we did employ up to 600 employees seasonally. And since I have sold the stores, I've thoroughly been enjoying my semi-retirement. I have done a couple of workshops, and I actually have submitted a contract to teach entrepreneurship at a college. And until I get those contracts back in, I'll wait to announce that. But that is my future plans.
Wow, you're retired at such a young age. How does it feel?
Well, my children keep letting me know how old I am. So what I keep telling myself is young, they keep telling me it's not. But one of the things that I have discovered is, for so long, my work and my drive and where I went to school and what I did, I always thought that those were who I was. And now that I don't have those things, I've really become happy about who I am as a person. I only do mission-led works. Like even this education opportunity, I'm working at a HBCU, and it's really, really not about the paycheck. It's about hopefully helping other young Black entrepreneurs get their start.
Before we get on to your topic, I really want to ask you to expand upon that thought. You were saying that stuff isn't who you are, but you found white men. Can you explain to our audience? Because I'm sure a lot of people could get a lot out of that.
Yeah, like a lot of times, you know, John Smith is a lawyer, or Marcus Jackson is a doctor. And we spend so much time in our careers. We spend so much of our days doing the work, coming home, you know, just kind of having a respite just to go back to work. And that becomes who we are, the labors that we do. And being freed of that, you know, and I get it. A lot of people my age don't have this kind of economic freedom yet. But to have the freedom to do the things that you want to do. I work with an organization called Heal the Hood that does mentoring and goes into our inner city schools. I do some things with my church. I've done some things with the food bank, but everything I do now is mission-based. It's all about doing purpose-led works. And the other thing is, I only work on my time. If I don't want to go in on Thursday, I don't go in on Thursday, you know, as opposed to my time being structured by work or by other people.
Wow. I'm just impressed. Well, I don't want to say impressed, but intrigued with that concept of how you feel freer in that you're not, your time and your energy and your talent is not dominated by the work you do. And even more so the way you define yourself, the way other people define you. Just a philosophical question before we get on to
let me tag on to that a little bit. Other part of that is that we spend so much of our time trying to reach a goal, trying to you know, get to a point in our career, trying to become a vice president, or you know, be a doctor, or whatever your goal is. And the goals in themselves, you know, unless it truly is your purpose, it's not going to fill you up. It's just going to be work. And I can't tell you how many doctor friends I have. I do have a couple that thoroughly enjoy their jobs, but I do have a lot of them who are like, you know, when I was in school, this isn't what I thought it was going to be. That I spend as much time charting as I do with my patients. I have to turn my patients over every 15 minutes because that's what's required, you know, and the real work of our jobs doesn't fill us up. You know, at least that's what I've discovered in my journey.
Wow. And I'm glad you expanded up on that. And my question from a philosophical stance, if looking back on your own career and your own spiritual development, can a person have a professional career and at the same time be filled? Because you stated you feel more fulfilled now that you don't have that. You get to do what you want to do and you work on mission-led work. But for our professionals out here who want both simultaneously, how can we have professional careers and at the same time be fulfilled in the work we do? It shouldn't have to be just after when you retire.
All right. Is it possible? And they're not diametrically opposed to one another. When I had my franchises, like I said, I employed 600 people. I understand McDonald's isn't the greatest job, but I had managers who'd been with me for 15, 20 years, who never graduated from high school, finished with stock, with you know, a retirement plan, and had a career path. I took very seriously, not the high school kids, because to them it was just a job to have money in their pocket, but for the adults that worked for me, and some of them still reach out to me. They know that they could, you know, hey, Mr. Kent, I'm a little short on my light bill, that I took my responsibility of them and their families to bed every single night. Like, that was what stressed me. You can find purpose in your job. Everybody can. There's an kind of a moral strength in working. Is that your life's purpose? And for me, it hasn't been. I was able to feed my family and do all the things that I wanted to do because of my work. But what I would have gotten the most out of, because I've also coached for the last 15 years, is coaching, is mentoring with children, maybe even teaching. And, you know, that's what I said I'm kind of going into now. But a lot of us end up doing what we have to do. And then they have this whole saying, oh, if you do what you love, you'll never have to work a day in your life. And when I talk to people who've done that, most of the time, and not all the time, you know, it's not 100%, but a lot of times what they've done is they've taken their passion and they've made it work. And they made it where they got to be there from 8 to 5, Monday through Friday, whether they like to or not. They have to work with people, whether they like them or not, and it's no longer their passion. You know, I have friends that are teachers and principals who are very passionate about the kids, very passionate about the work they do, but they have all this BS that goes along with it. Mm-hmm. You know, they have the economic restraints. They have all of the lesson plan, like all the other stuff that takes away from them connecting with their students. So I'm not saying that they're opposed to one another, but what I'm saying is once I was free from having to work and allowed to do the things that I wanted to, and you might not want to do nothing. You might just want to enjoy life, but they really have convinced us as a society as a whole, we're supposed to work till we're 60, 65 years old. Mm. And then sit on our butts and enjoy the mm-hmm. fruits of our labor. Mm-hmm. You know, I want to travel. I want to still be fit. I still want to be able to mm-hmm. experience things as, you know, I can't say a young man, I say a middle-aged guy. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. You know, just now you got me all on the tangent. I was a philosopher, you know.
Well, when you stated it, you know, I couldn't help but get your perspective on that idea, because like you said, our society teaches us that we have to work, and then 65 retire and enjoy life. And it just from what you stated, you just found so much fulfillment after not having work. But some people do have to work, right? So right. How do we maintain a lifestyle where we are enjoying our work and enjoying our lives and not waiting till later to enjoy our lives?
If I had that answer, I could make a whole lot of people happy. But there are a lot of things that we've all had to do with our jobs that we don't necessarily like. Mm-hmm. But those are the things that allow you, when you're not at work, to do the things that you want to do. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Whatever, you know, if you're a creative person, if you're a religious person, whatever your outlet is, whatever brings you happiness and joy, your job should be able, if you're working and you're working hard and it's just media work, because all of us ain't gonna be in a great mission-led job. We're not gonna be in our dream jobs. Some of us just gotta get the jobs that pay the bills. But in order for me to make sense is that when I'm off work, I have to be able to do those things that feed me, mm-hmm. feed me spiritually, feed me emotionally. And that's after I feed my children. That's the most important, that I feed my family and my children. But once the bills are paid, like, I have to have enough time to, you know, indulge in the activities that pour back into me.
Well, thank you so much for spending time to philosophize with us this morning. So tell us about this topic and your concept on bad entrepreneurs. I know you have a lot you want to share with us today. And so let's get right to it.
Okay. Over the years, I have helped a lot of new business owners, whether it was helping them to find financing, whether it was helping them to develop their business plan, giving them direction, all these type of things. And what I noticed from 10 years ago to now is a lot of people are taking, a lot of people, when I say fat entrepreneurs, want to be bosses, want to be entrepreneurs, want to be, you know, get the bag and all of these things. And when you look at Instagram and you look at the social media, these people have these boutiques or they're selling lashes or they're selling t-shirts and they're doing all these things and they're all making all this money. But we can know just from walking down the street that all these people ain't making all this money. But what it's done is it's created this illusion that, oh, I can create an internet store and make the bag. And although they'll do a little bit of research to figure out where they can get whatever clothes cheap and then do the resale on them or, you know, whatever their small business idea is, without really doing the foundation work that they need to have a successful business, one, or two, understanding what the real opportunities in that business are. From the other side of it, I can tell you how many people have told me things like, oh yeah, I ordered this online and it took 3 months to come in. And that's because the person on the other end didn't have their systems in place when they started their business. I've seen people say, oh, you know, y'all want to support this, that, and the other, but you won't support my small business when I start out. And I'm like, well, you're selling t-shirts. All your friends have bought a t-shirt. These could be the greatest t-shirts in the world, but nobody else knows you had a t-shirt. You know, you haven't done the marketing. You haven't done the investing. You haven't found your niche and how to market to them, like all of these things. And I have so many people within the last few years tell me they have these great ideas for business startups. And I used to really sit down and, you know, talk about first steps and what they need to do. And I have really gotten to the point where I tell them, yeah, that's not going to work. And they'd be like, oh, but you don't know. I'm like, yeah, I kind of do. That's not going to work. And I don't like to be, you know, a dream crusher, but I'm trying to be realistic. And if they haven't put in the real work, you know, to be an entrepreneur or to be a quote unquote boss and to really understand what that means, because they think that means they don't have to work for nobody else. I don't have to answer to nobody else. My time is my own time. And really, it's the opposite. You have so much less time until your business becomes a profitable living organism on its own. Even if you have other employees. And I can tell you from my experience, I told you I had 600 employees. And when McDonald's went to 24 hours, for the next 6 months, I didn't get a full night of sleep. But, you know, like people have this image that if you're an entrepreneur, oh, I'm going to drive around in my G-Wagon with my big with my big bag and flies on everybody and post up on Instagram and show them how great it is. But
so I totally get your concept about fad entrepreneurs, that they really aren't engaged in the real work. And you defined the real work as, you know, building a foundation, understanding how your business is supposed to operate or creating systems, and also marketing and making sure that your market, your niche market knows that you exist. So can you or will you expand upon those ideas and other advice you would give to entrepreneurs to make sure that we are not in the category of bad entrepreneurs?
Well, the first thing that I would say is it is perfectly acceptable to have a side hustle. Like, everyone doesn't have to be a boss. You can do this on the side. You can do it small. You can make you some extra money, make you some good money, and it's, you know, can be your side hustle. Do it for the right reasons. Don't do it because you've seen other people being, you know, selling hair. So now you're going to say, hey, everybody sells hair. Your hair ain't no better, no different than anybody else's hair. Now, unless you have a built-in marketplace of customers that are going to buy hair from you, maybe this isn't your lick. But to really, 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 and this is what, when people come to me, I tell them it's not going to work. I tell them to do their research. I was like, don't do your research on Instagram. Go find out what the norms are for the industry. Find out how many people are doing it. Find out how many people are doing it in your community. You know, find out what would separate you from them. You know, if you don't have an idea of who your customers are, you don't have any customers. And those are the kind of things that I impress on people. And I try to do it in a positive way. But lately, because so many people have come to me with an idea or a thought or an image rather than a thought out business plan, I have recently gotten real short. But and that's one of the things that I want to focus on. Well, I have focused on in my workshops and want to focus on in the class is building your business from the ground up. Because when we see them on Instagram or we see people that at least show pictures of success, of have this modicum of success, we all imagine ourselves there and start from the top rather than seeing the struggle. Because even the ones that are successful had to build it up. And if you don't have an investor, because, you know, a lot of times we just see the success, but we don't see the growth. We don't see the struggle. And we don't see where they're, you know, getting their initial funding, which is always a big part. And no one ever talks about it. If you're going to sell hair, how are you going to buy the hair? Where are you going to get the money from? If you're going to do an online boutique, how are you going to have your inventory? You know, how much money is going to be tied up in your inventory before it sells out? Do you have that kind of float? But nobody talks about those kind of concepts. So they're always looking from the successful perspective down rather than looking at building their business from the ground up.
So when you talk about building your business from the ground up, can you expand on that? Because there's different connotations for that. Because building your business from the ground up, everybody builds their business from the ground up. If you look at it, all businesses are new businesses unless you have inherited something. So what do you mean by building business from the ground up?
When I say building your business from the ground up, starting out with a strong business plan and a strong vision and plotting out your strategy from getting your business license to successful business and all the steps along the way. Most, and when I say most, I'm talking in the 90 percentile, businesses close within the first 3 years, usually because of either underfunding or because they don't have the customer base to support the product. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Understanding that slow growth is growth. You know, a lot of people close their doors because they've been doing this for 6 months and they're in the same place they started, but they don't realize that, you know, you have more exposure, you know, just keep beating the sidewalk. But if they haven't made significant money, they feel like they failed. And that's why I talk about making sure you have sustaining capital, like we talked about in the last one, and funding and all of those kind of things. But when I say people that don't have a good foundation to build it from the ground up, let's take the online boutique, for instance. They find out, oh, I can get these clothes from China. I found someone to set up my website. I take some pictures and I start. You haven't done any of the foundational work. You haven't, you know, contacted the internet searches so that when people are searching for clothes, it comes to you. You haven't, you know, done any kind of direct marketing. You haven't done any kind of financial planning. You just found some cute outfits took some pictures of it, found someone to do your website, and think you're in business. And that's what I mean when I say you haven't done the foundational work. You haven't built from the ground up.
Okay. So we're using the built from the ground up, just using the house as an analogy. You didn't do the foundation. You didn't put up the siding. You just started with the roof, and the foundation wasn't built first. That's kind of an analogy.
Like putting the walls together before you laid any concrete.
Yep.
And
yep.
Even if the house looks pretty on the outside, mm-hmm. mm-hmm. Yeah, it's like
it's
that.
Made of straw. Yeah. Yeah. Good advice. So in our last few minutes, can you give us some specific calls to action you stated many in the process of you talking, but what points would you like to highlight to ensure that the entrepreneurs who are listening to you or aspiring entrepreneurs don't become the fad entrepreneurs, as you call them?
I'll give you a couple. The first is successful entrepreneurs love to talk about themselves. If there is someone that is doing what you want to do and is successful at it, reach out to them. Tell them you'd like to interview them, you want to talk to them. Have you a list of questions when you do? You know, the things that you don't know, don't be afraid to ask. The second thing, and you know, I when you asked for cause of actions last time, I know I said this. For your first few years, hopefully you can make some money at it. But if you don't make money at it, you need to have had a plan to have the company be self-sustaining, because you can have the great product, all of these things, and it you know, doesn't have enough blood, which is the cash flow, doesn't have enough blood to keep sustaining its life. I'm working with a company now that was local that just got a national contract, and they can't produce their product to service all of the new outlets. And we were talking about it, and I said, I put them in touch with some other people, where I was like, you need to tell these folks you can't do this till next year, because what's going to happen is you're going to get all of these orders that you can't fill. Mm. And, you know, we called the people, we went back, and that's where we are with it. And, you know, sometimes you have to take a step back. You know, we all want to, and he had his plan, but the opportunity came up and he changed his plan. And I was like, if you keep working your plan and you keep putting out a quality product, just like you got discovered here, you're going to still have that. But you're putting yourself in a position to fail when you do those kind of things. So yes, stick to your plan, have sustaining capital, and talk to successful people who are doing what it is that you want to do. Those would be my top three pieces of advice.
Great advice. So for the entrepreneurs out there, if anybody wants to get in contact with you and having a more extended conversation with you, or if they want to take that class from you in person or virtually, how would they get in contact with you?
Well, I actually don't really do any consulting, but if anyone was to reach out to you, I'd be more than happy to answer any correspondence.
Okay, sounds great. So if you're interested in getting in touch with Kent Jones, you can get in touch with me, Ramona Houston, at the Empowerment Zone on my website, ramonahouston.com, and I will make that connection for you. Thank you so much, Kent. This has been a really, really great conversation to have with you, as always. I would love to have you back to continue the conversation, because I'm sure one of the things that I learned from being a professor is that no one has the monopoly on knowledge, and that we can he's a graduate of Morehouse. Okay, y'all, and he's showing his Morehouse t-shirt. I am a former professor of Morehouse. So one of the great things that I learned from being a professor is that not only are you there to teach, but you do learn a lot from your students, right? And so I'm sure you
haven't taught yet.
Well, that's what I'm saying. I'm saying you're going to learn from your students. So we'd love to have you back to tell us some of those things you learned from your students about entrepreneurship as well.
And for those of you who lasted through our philosophical conversation to get to the entrepreneurship part of the conversation, y'all are the real heroes.
Thanks, Kent. So Kent, we're now in our college strategies portion of our interview, and you gave us some great advice last time you were on. So what advice would you give students who are attending college or aspire to attend college to make sure that they are successful? But before you do, forgot to ask you, what school or schools did you attend? What were your majors, and what were your degrees?
I went to Morehouse College. I graduated with a double major in economics and business administration. And I completed 3 years of a 5-year JD MBA program at the University of Memphis.
Okay, great. So what is that strategy you have for college success?
Despite what we think, most of your college grades are very, very subjective. Make sure all of your professors know who you are. You can take a strong C, do those office hours, stay after class, and you can get a B. That's my advice, and I promise you it works.
Okay, so ignore the fact that he said we'll push you over, even though I do agree with him. We can push you over, meaning professors. But most importantly, he's saying build relationships with your professors. That's the most important thing you want to get out. And I do totally agree with him that when it comes time to it, if you have that 88 average or that 89 mm-hmm. average, and the professor sees that you have taken initiative all semester, that you've done everything you could do to excel in the class, I do agree, even though I don't want to agree, that sometimes professors do push you over into that A.
If you go to your professor's office with an 88 and they have not seen you all year and you say, hey, my name is Kent and I need to talk to you mm-hmm. about my grades, they have no, mm-hmm. you're mm-hmm. nobody to them. Mm-hmm. But if you have spent the time building mm-hmm. that relationship, been by their office hours, asking questions about problems, they are very, very, most of them are very willing to work with you.
And that is so, so true. So make sure that you're not anonymous during the whole semester and all of a sudden show your face at the end of the semester. And it's other benefits that come along with that too, because professors are the ones who sit on these scholarship committees. They're the first ones to hear about scholarships, internships, professional development opportunities. So you want to develop those relationships with your professors beyond you seeking a great grade, but also because there's so many other things that professors can help you achieve throughout your matriculation. So thank you so much for that great advice, Kent.
All right. Have a good evening.
Okay. Thank you for joining us on the Empowerment Zone.
A special thank you to the incredible team of the Empowerment Zone. Terry Ungully, theme song, NADWORKS, digital support, and of course, our featured guest.
If you enjoyed my podcast, please subscribe. We are on all of your favorite podcast platforms. Be sure to rate us on Apple Podcasts too. Thank you for your continued support.